So welcome back, everyone. Good to see people. And if it works to have your video on, it's nice for me to be able to see people as we're talking together. So if that can work for you, that's great. So I want to continue with some of the themes that I opened up last week. I had come back just a few days before from 4 weeks on retreat at Spirit Rock, and it was a very inspiring and important retreat, although I've done similar length retreats probably 30 times, so it's familiar, but still it was energizing and inspiring, and like other retreats, it gave a chance to look at the big picture without so many of the day-to-day details and things to do and distractions. So it was, for me, an important retreat, and I still very much feel the energy of the retreat. It's been 10 days or so since it was over, but the energy feels there, and I've actually shifted some of my daily routines. And so they are really adjustments I've made to daily routines that let me feel connected to those 4 weeks. And what I did last time was I identified some of my own personal learning from the retreat and then connected that with the larger theme of deepening practice and identifying different ways of deepening practice which could be applied by any of us in our own ways. And I didn't realize it, but I actually identified what came to be 10 ways of deepening practice. I didn't count them at the time, but there actually were 10, which is a good number, you know, in many, many world traditions. You know, 10 is good. It was pretty good for the Buddha. He had some lists of 10. Seems to have been pretty good for Moses with a certain number of commandments and so forth. So I had 10. It reminded me of when I wrote the book, The Engaged Spiritual Life, and I had 11 chapters. And the editor said, "No way. We got to have 10. And so, interestingly, the chapter that was cut was one on conflict. I thought that was humorous. I have to remember that story. Anyway, so I have 10 that were particularly coming from what I learned at the retreat, and that could be applied by each of us in daily life. And last time I invited people to see if there were one or two which particularly call you, and invited you actually to apply the way of deepening in the last week. So I want to give plenty of room for discussion and hear from some of you who did that and maybe what you found out or explored. And I'll show us the list. But I wanted to, Hiroki, you've raised your hand. We have a discussion time at the end. Are you okay bringing up whatever you have after the talk? Okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so we'll hopefully hear what some people have experienced in the last week. And just to say that the list of 10 is not comprehensive. These are not my 10 all-time favorites for deepening practice. In fact, I probably could have a list of 20. But these are the 10 that particularly came up in the context of my retreat. So there are significant ones, significant ways of deepening, for example, that are not mentioned. You know, and I'll actually speak to some of them. One of them, for example, has to do with formal practice. I don't say too much about level of formal practice. I don't say too much about community or sangha or different ways of getting support. I could do that if I was going to give a comprehensive list. So these are a little bit personal, just coming from the retreat. And what I'll do today is I want to go into more depth on each of the 10 and identify them and also have it be accessible to you to have the list. So I want to ask Carlita, I prepared a list of the 10, and let's put it on the screen share now, and we'll go and look at these particular 10 ways of deepening practice. And I'll name these, and these are the 10 that I'll go through in the talk. And what I invite us to do is to listen for the one or two which particularly call you. Not to try to do all of them, that doesn't usually work, but to do one or two for the next period of time. And this list will be in the chat, and you can access it or even, I think, download it. And I'll also, when I bring the recording onto Dharma Seed for storage there, I'll add this list so you can have it available on the website dharmaseed.org. and be able to download it from there. So this will be available. So I'll just read these through, and then I'll go through each of the 10. These are the ones that were inspired by my retreat. Number one, attend retreats, which we can think of as times of intensive training, of one day or longer regularly. Number two, remember the core intention to be aware and awake as often as possible. Number three, connect being aware or mindful and or working with the wisdom teaching with loving kindness and compassion. It's connecting more what we sometimes call the mind with the heart. It's one way to talk about it. Have integration. Number four, ask often, what is my practice right now? It might be mindfulness while walking or doing the dishes or loving kindness or compassion with someone or some other way of being present and aware and being guided by wisdom and kindness. Number five, what is my next step or what are my next two steps in deepening my practice? What is my learning edge? It might involve commitment to a regular practice or adding a second period of formal meditation or taking a mindful walk every day or bringing awareness to cooking or bringing kindness to meetings and gatherings and so forth. Number six, pausing, stopping and resetting a few times a day is key. Number seven, prioritizing in one's life, asking what is most important, what do I need to let go of to make more room for what is most important. Number eight, recognizing the importance of subtle body energy work, as in many approaches, including Qigong, some Tibetan practices, some aspects of yoga, etc., and bringing this into one's life, helping with embodiment and shifting one's own sense of the body. Number nine, invite not doing in meditation and daily life, and balance this with the importance at times of doing. And there are talks on doing and not doing that I previously gave that can be found on Dharma Seed. Number 10, know ways of coming back when one is stuck or lost or not present or caught in reactivity. One can set intentions, as we did during the guided meditation, when these occur and to respond as skillfully as possible. So again, listen for what calls you, and listen as we go through these 10 in the next short period of time. So we can let that go. Thanks, Carlita. So I'll go through these again. Number one, attend retreats of one day or longer regularly. And I like to think of retreats as times of intensive training. This is a time really to focus on practice. Really, really helpful for learning, for making corrections, for giving energy and inspiration. And the retreats can be done in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be a residential retreat. It could be something like just taking a day with a group. You know, a lot of groups, both online and in person, offer one day retreats. And many, many through Spirit Rock, pretty much almost, Carlita, almost like every weekend, there's a day long, either in person or online or both, that you can do. Another practice which I like very much is the practice that I call a Sabbath practice, which is taking part, at least, of one day. It could be one day. I do it typically one day a week. And I've had a Sabbath practice for most of the last 35 years. And I typically do them on Wednesdays before the pandemic. You know, Wednesdays is not a traditional Sabbath day. But as I often like to joke, doing it on Wednesdays protects my very active social life over the weekend. Just joking. Okay. But the Sabbath is really a time, and it becomes very powerful if you do it every week or maybe once or twice a month. It doesn't have to be the whole day. It can be half a day, could be 3 hours in the morning that you do a little bit differently than your ordinary day. And the particular way that this gets really strengthened is when it becomes regular. And when you have it on your schedule and say, okay, this is what's happening, no negotiation, right? This is what I'm doing. And again, it can be 3 hours. A lot of my practitioners that I work with on an ongoing basis do something like this. It makes a huge difference. It's like a retreat or a mini retreat regularly. You know, and when we do a retreat, over time, we also get to focus on areas that we might need development in. We can do retreats developing concentration, you know, or mindfulness, or loving kindness, or compassion, or equanimity. You know, when we do periods like this, we can get away from our usual routines and habits, which is so freeing in many ways and gives us a chance to reevaluate some of our routines or habits, gets us to see them, you know. And, you know, on my longer retreat, it is really helpful for looking at the big picture of my life, which is really important to do regularly. So again, this can be done in a variety of ways. When I do a retreat at home, just on my own, you know, for a lot of years, I had a pattern. I would, when I wasn't teaching on a Wednesday, I would do a morning. I'd do 2 or 3 hours of formal meditation, and then I would go up into the forest, not far from my house, and I would walk in the forest, take a walk, and then sit by a redwood tree and meditate, and then do sitting and walking meditation for the afternoon, and then come back in the evening and, you know, and have a meal. And so you can do it in different ways. You can listen to talks, you can read, you can take walks, can really make it your own. But the key is having a kind of a break from the daily routine where you do things a little bit differently. And they can really touch our deeper motivation, you know, as many of you know from retreats. So that's number one. And again, you might like all of these 10, but don't be greedy. Just do one or two. Because that's what works. When you're, you know, the research on developing new habits says not too much, have it be doable, and have it connected with some with what you're already doing. And then the other research shows when you take on a new habit and you keep it going, at a certain point, give yourself a reward. Very important. Okay? So if you do one of these 10 and it kind of solidifies, make sure you give yourself a reward. Your choice of reward. Okay, number two. Remember the core intention to be aware and awake as often as possible. You know, this is what our practice is about. It's about being awake increasingly moment to moment and having periods, you know, and retreats are wonderful for this, where we can experience being more or less awake and aware a large chunk of the time. You know, it can be really inspiring, including times, you know, which are informal. You know, it's one of my inspirations from the retreat that I could be mostly really awake and aware during meals, just doing walking somewhere, you know, the more informal time, not just the formal meditation. You know, not being on automatic, not being caught in thinking. Coming back over and over again, this is what we do. You know, and what helps us to remember this intention to be awake or aware? For some people, it could be, you know, having an image, artwork, statue of the Buddha, something that reminds you. Could be to put on your refrigerator the little sign, Donald, be aware, something like that. You know, put it on your refrigerator, you know, teach it to your parrot so the parrot repeats it many times a day. Yeah, I just made that up. That doesn't come from the Buddha, right? So find ways that we get the reminders. Another way of doing that is to have a formal way of setting intentions a few times a day. It can just take a minute or two. I do this 4 times a day. Before breakfast, in the morning, typically beginning of the morning after breakfast, the afternoon, the evening, and I set the intention. I actually have it takes about 2 or 3 minutes, a list of intentions. And I repeat that to myself and it makes a difference, right? And yours doesn't have to be 2 or 3 minutes, doesn't have to be as involved. It can just be taking 30 seconds and setting an intention that's in your own words. You know, let me be present. Let me come with my kindness and my wisdom for the next period of time. Can be a specific intention before a meeting or a gathering or being with someone. Number three, connect being aware or mindful and or working with a wisdom teaching with loving kindness and compassion. This follows from what we explored in January, really coming out of my teaching of a one-week metta retreat, the way that so often, and surprisingly, in Western Buddhism, wisdom and mindfulness are not so integrated with kindness and compassion. You know, and I located that historically in the way that metta practice, loving kindness practice, came from the Burmese tradition to the West, where they use a text called the Visuddhimagga from the 5th century, in which loving kindness practice is classified as a concentration practice, not necessarily connected with wisdom, whereas that is not what the Buddha taught, right? And so, you know, the talks on more detail on that are on the website Dharma Seed. But it led me really to emphasize something that I've been emphasizing for several years, which is, can I connect awareness with kindness? And a key vehicle for me that I talked about last time is the practice of radiating metta, where you let the metta radiate out from your heart into space. You know, and this was my default practice during the retreat, which I loved, that I would just walk and I would be with radiating metta that would go out to the trees and the landscape and the people. And at Spirit Rock, we have a lot of turkeys and crows, especially, and, you know, occasional peahens, you know, and I would bring the radiating metta, and I would do it in the dining hall when I was having meals. And this is a beautiful practice developed in the teachings in January. There's a guided meditation, which is on Dharma Seed, if you want to renew your acquaintance with that. It's one way of connecting awareness with kindness and compassion. And you could do that also in your mindfulness practice by just remembering, let me connect my mindfulness with kindness. Again, if we don't have that intention, for many of us, myself included, it's not going to happen. And it can be, the mindfulness can be a little more cognitive. That's the way it was for me for a lot of years, and not necessarily so integrated. And Sylvia has a great reminder. She says, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet this moment as a friend. It's beautiful because actually, some of you know, the etymology of metta is connected with words for being friendly, having friendship, and so forth, which I think in that culture is a little bit stronger than it is in our culture. The idea of a friend, very, 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 very central. So we can bring together, this is the third way to deepen, is connect awareness, mindfulness, wisdom, being guided by practices with kindness and compassion. Look for that integration. Again, it's often said that the teachings are like a bird with two wings, wisdom and compassion. Both are crucial. Number four, ask often, what is my practice right now? And again, you can access this list in the chat and download it, or wait till it's on Dharma Seed and have the list for yourself. What is my practice right now? It might be mindfulness while walking or doing the dishes or loving kindness or compassion with someone, or some other way of being present and aware, being guided by wisdom and kindness. And again, we can do that as an intention. What's my practice right now? And this is particularly asking, here I am right now, what's the most suitable way to be present and bring my practice in? You know, I might be taking a walk and I might say, oh, let me just be with my body. Let me be aware of my body. It might be at a meeting and you say, let me try not to be distracted. Let me bring in loving kindness. Might be at a family gathering, might be something similar. It might be cooking. What's my practice right now? Can I bring awareness while I'm cooking or cleaning up? You know? So this is particularly helpful for our more informal time. We can ask, what's my practice right now? This is from Achan Cha, the great teacher from the Thai forest tradition, who taught in the last century, a teacher of Jack Kornfield. I got to study with him myself for a period of time. He said, proper effort is not the effort to make something particular happen. It's the effort to be aware and awake in each moment, the effort to overcome laziness, the effort to make each activity of our day meditation. That's their emphasis in a monastery. You know, it's to remember to be aware. You know, and this is a training, not to be too harsh for demanding of oneself. Again, the whole key of what I'm bringing up in the this week and last week is not to have some standard. I need to be at this level. Not to be demanding, but just to ask, what's my next step? How do I deepen? The aim is deepening. It's not to be, you know, putting some standard on oneself. I should be here. We want to watch out for that. It's just to keep deepening. Another way of saying it is to keep remembering that my life is about learning and development. It's a beautiful way to really have a sense of what my life is about, you know, and we can say more about what we're learning or developing in, maybe developing in wisdom and love and my own particular gifts that I have, you know, as an individual. It's a beautiful way to talk about it, but to see one's own life as learning. How to do that? How can I keep learning? It's a beautiful way to give a very simple sense, but profound sense of meaning. Achan Cha continues, everywhere you look is the Dharma. Constructing a building, walking down the road, sitting in the bathroom, or here in the meditation hall, all of this is Dharma. There is nothing in the world that is not Dharma. It's basically saying every moment can be a moment of practice or learning. And one thing that I find helpful in this regard, I don't think I mentioned this last week, is to know which activities are easier for you to be aware with and which are harder. You know, one of my teachers called this having a hierarchy of difficulty in terms of bringing mindfulness or awareness or kindness, you know. And so for many of us, taking a walk, especially maybe if we're on our own and not talking, might be a pretty easy way to bring in awareness. Maybe, again, maybe cooking or cleaning up can be a way. Maybe talking with someone is harder, right? Maybe talking or listening to a talk. For me, the hardest is being on the computer. Not easy. Anyone mastered awareness being on the computer? Okay. I don't see any hands. Okay. I was going to invite you to teach next time if you raise your hand. So for me, it's helpful to know which are easier, which are harder. That's called like having a hierarchy of difficulty. And it's also helpful to know, kind of related to this, for a given activity, which is an easier practice, which is a harder practice. So maybe taking a walk, it might be just to ask, what's the easiest way to be aware? It might just to be have a general awareness of my body. Might be to be more focused on the feet, you know? So for a given activity, what's the easiest way? What's the easiest practice to bring in? What's the harder? Maybe when we're talking with someone, or maybe like listening to talk like right now, I can be aware by just feeling my hands, having 20% of my attention on my hands. It's a nice way of having some awareness when we're talking or listening to people. When I was first coming into teaching, my mentor, John Travis, he gave me guidance. He said, when you're teaching, be aware of your belly, be aware of your heart, be aware of your body, and let your thoughts self-organize. I like that. That's still an aspiration, right? Not always easy. I don't always remember. But awareness of my body, my heart, and then, you know, letting, you know, not being so much tied to my notes, but letting the thoughts come more spontaneously, grounded in my body, grounded in being present. That's my aspiration for teaching, right? And so that's what I've been practicing in a way for almost 25 years, that he gave me that guidance a long time ago. So that's important. when my mind is really busy, what's a helpful practice? That's something to ask as well. Number five, what's my next step, or what are my next two steps in deepening my practice? This is really related to the whole talk, but having some clarity about what my learning edge is can be really, really helpful. You know, and identifying, okay, my learning edge for this week is keeping my new routine. This was one of my edges coming out of the retreat. I shifted my daily routine to have a little bit more formal practice, and I've kept with it, right? That's one of my learning edges. You know, it might be committing to a particular practice or adding some meditation periods or saying, you know, any of the 10 that I'm listing, that could be the learning edge. You know, again, what calls one, what's not too much, what's doable, really, really crucial. And not to compare oneself with others, really, really important. You know, one's learning edge is very personal. What's my own personal learning edge? I don't have to compare myself with anyone. Really, 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 really crucial. And what I found is, you know, when I work with people one-on-one, I think one of the benefits of having a mentor is that I, you know, one of my areas of focus when I work with people is to identify what's the learning edge for the next period of time. That's part of what I do as a mentor or teacher when I work closely with people. And you could do this with a mentor or teacher. You could also do it with a friend. You could just connect with a friend. Maybe you talk once a week for 20 minutes or once every 2 weeks. And you can support each other in identifying what's my learning edge. That can be really, really helpful. Or do it with one's partner, that whatever that is. Number six, pausing, stopping, and resetting a few times a day is key. One can make an intention, you know, to let me just pause. Like I'm finding myself really busy or my mind is getting really caught up in something. Can I just stop for 2 minutes, feel my body, ask what's happening, come back to being present? Really, really simple practice. Bringing that in a few times a day can make a great difference, a world of difference, really. It's really a very simple, but in a way almost like magical practice. Very, very interesting. You know, finding a way to do that. You know, you can especially do that if there's maybe a sense of reactivity. You know, these days when I'm on the computer, I think I mentioned last time, I have a recording of a 45-minute recording in which there's a bell rung every 5 minutes. And I have that playing on my computer when I'm on the computer, because remember, this is my hardest practice. And it rings, and I just stop for a little while. Most of the time. Sometimes I hear the bell and I don't hear it, right? Do you know that on the computer? Sometimes it's like that. But a lot of times I hear it and I stop for a moment. I'm unaware, and it brings more awareness to what for me is my hardest place of being aware. Yeah. So those are a few ideas. And pausing really is a beautiful way to help cut through habits and conditioning. You know, and I thought of, it kind of breaks the trance. And I thought of a poem by a great Japanese poet named Nanao Sakaki. He said, "To stay young, to save the world, break the mirror." It's a short poem. To stay young, to save the world, break the mirror. I think my interpretation is that break your habits and your conditioning, cut through them some. Pausing helps with that. Number 7, prioritizing in one's life, asking what's most important. What do I need to let go of to make more room for what's most important? And we can keep asking this. I mentioned that retreats are a wonderful way to ask this question because we can give an answer to it from a relatively uncluttered awareness. So it's very nice to do at the end of a retreat, but you know, we might do it in other ways. What do I need to let go of? For me, I had some clarity. You know, for me, I wanted to prioritize my practice, my writing, close relationships, and my own engagement in the world. What do I let go of to have those come out more fully? You know, we may have an intuitive sense, but asking that question can be really, really helpful. Number 8. This is a little bit different. You wouldn't find this on many lists, but this was important for me. Recognize the importance of subtle body energy work. Because this was, as I mentioned last time, a core practice for me during the retreat. I've been doing Qigong for probably 15 years, which is one form of working with the subtle body energy. But I also, for about 6 years, have been doing a Tibetan practice called Tummo, also known as the inner fire practice. And it's, you know, very much works with all the chakras. It shifts awareness so that, you know, the world and my own body become more and more about subtle energy. And this is, again, I'm not saying everyone should do this, but this is something that was important for me. And it's something to consider. You could do this by some aspects of yoga or Qigong. There are, you know, a number of Tibetan practices that outline this. One person who has been very public in sharing some of these practices, which historically have not always been so public, is teacher Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche, who actually lives right near me and also has a center in Virginia. Tenzin, T-E-N-Z-I-N, Wangyal, W-A-N-G-Y-A-L. I think his book is called Awakening the Sacred Body. And but you could also study Qigong with Tisha Bell, who often teaches at Spirit Rock. And this can be very helpful. And this is an area of experience which Western science is rather slow to investigate. There has been some investigation of this, but mostly it's not part of Western science or Western medicine, even though in many cultures it's been a central part of what's helpful for health and for understanding the nature of the body. And so, but there is some ongoing Western scientific research that's occurring in this. And I find that working with the subtle body energy can be really, really helpful, particularly for people who have really active minds. I think I've mentioned at times that for people, some people have really, really active minds where mindfulness practice is too hard. And for them, I've often recommended Du Qigong because it's a body practice. Connecting with the energy of the body is one way of quieting the mind. That often works for some people in ways that are, you know, can work where mindfulness doesn't work. The best is doing both, right? That's great. So that's my number 8. Two more. How are we doing? Good. Number 9, this is also goes back to some of what we've explored on Wednesdays. Invite not doing in meditation and daily life. And balance this with the importance at times of doing. And I've given talks, I think, maybe 2 or 3 years ago that are on Dharma Seed, a series of talks on doing and not doing in daily life, meditation and daily life. And this has been really crucial for me and was a big part of the March retreat to have periods of time where my mind is pretty quiet. I don't have to do a lot to bring stability to the mind, and I just invite not doing. Just invite awareness to go where it wants to go. And this is really actually, for me, recognizing more and more that there's actually something sacred at work in our meditation. And that I don't have to be doing something all the time, that there's, you know, there's something basic and sacred that is there, really opening up my own practice. When my mind is quiet enough, that can manifest. You know, one of my teachers talks about this being primordial wisdom. Can we let this non-doing, and this is, you know, when we looked at not doing a few years ago, we mentioned how this is found in multiple traditions. You know, I think in Christian tradition, it could be expressed as not my will, but thy will, right? And there's a way in which as we go deeper, we learn to, that there's a really important place for doing, but there's also an important place for not doing. Again, expressed in many traditions. The Chinese Taoist tradition's wonderful expression in the work of Lao Tzu and Chuang Tzu. Lao Tzu says, this was 2,300 years ago, by doing nothing, everything is done. Tell that to your boss. And so, yeah, beautiful, a beautiful practice to cultivate. And then the last one, number 10, no ways of coming back when you're stuck or lost or not present or caught in reactivity. And we can set intentions to keep coming back during the day. You can, you know, we did this in our guided meditation this morning, or what was for me the morning, that we can say to ourselves, if I become reactive later today, let me notice that and come back. Doing that a few times a day, again, very, very helpful. You know, and let my times of being lost be ways of deepening my practice. In the Tibetan tradition, it said, turn all obstacles into the path of practice. Gloria Steinem said, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. I like that. So looking out for what comes up like that. So let me finish by, again, let's put the 10 on the screen again, Carlita. And let's look at these and ask the question, which of these call you? Which of these 10 call you? And again, we're looking for one or two. And maybe you've noticed it. And maybe there's something else that got catalyzed during the talk. Beautiful if we have one or two ways of deepening that we're aware of, you know, week by week. Because again, this can really give, you know, wonderful meaning to one's life, that my life is about learning and deepening in awareness and wisdom and love and skillful action and all sorts of things. Let me finish. Take a look at this. And again, you can download this from, I think, from the chat. And also then I'll post it on Dharma Seed. So we can take this off now, Carlita. Thanks. I'll finish just with one simple line that comes from a great Tibetan teacher named Shabkar, who lived at the end of the 19th, beginning, or end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th century in Tibet. He said very, very simply, let your life and practice be one. Let your life and practice be one. Let's take a moment now and just invite everyone, if you wish, to reflect. What maybe you reflect more if you came up with one or two ways of deepening that you'd like to stay with and follow through on. Bring those to mind. Maybe if you explored this in the last week, you can bring that to mind as well. We'll take about a minute, a little more than a minute in silence, and then we'll have some time to share. Good. So let's open things up to any sharing or questions or spontaneous poems, whatever. And we have a nice chunk of time, so we should have a chance for a lot of people to share. If you want to share something that came up in the last week, please. Yeah, Sarah, please. And we talked last week, didn't we? Yeah, hi.
Yes.
There you go.
Sorry, I want to take the advantage of talking to you, I think. Well, the question or the comment that I have is, I have heard a lot about how energy is somatized in the body.
Yeah.
Or emotions.
Yeah.
So one of the points that it resonates a lot to me, it's number 8, recognize the subtle energy body, how it works, how movement and how the that kind of movement helps to release that kind of problems or emotions that are stored in my body.
Yeah.
I have fibromyalgia, for example, and that's something that I cannot find the connection, how it works. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, how might one or more of the different forms that I've called subtle energy work, how does it help with, when I have problems in my mind or difficult emotions and so forth? Is that a way of saying it? Yeah, a few things come to me. One of them is that when we're doing those body practices, we're much more grounded in the body. And a lot of our difficult emotional states come, I think, from when we're almost like disconnected from the body, somewhat disembodied, and maybe a negative thought just goes in loops and keeps repeating. We're probably all familiar with that, right? And so, just being in the body actually doesn't even have to be subtle energy. It could just be, I remember that when I was a teacher at a graduate school, we had like 7-hour meetings once a month. And right after the meetings, I would always go and swim for half an hour. And just being in my body would take a lot of my repetitive thoughts away or things I was troubled about. So there's something about grounding in the body, just in general, which is really, really helpful, not being so caught in the loops, the repetition. And then the another aspect of the subtle energy is that actually it goes into states that are often blissful. that are actually very, very pleasant. And so you guess I, you know, so it's almost like we're having some very positive experience that can be a counterweight to the difficult experience with the mind or emotion. So, and maybe a third aspect of it, and this isn't comprehensive, but a third aspect is that the when the body starts to get filled with the subtle energy, the mind gets much more quiet. And so we don't have so much, again, of those repetitive thoughts or getting caught in a loop or getting caught in a repetitive pattern. So I don't think that's a comprehensive answer, but it's maybe a beginning. Is that helpful, Sarah?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Isabel, please. Still muted, Isabel, sorry. There you go. No, still muted.
Okay, there we go.
There you go.
Well, I have kind of a similar question because I, too, am really, that's the one I'm going to focus on along with pausing.
Yeah.
My practice is pretty good right now, but there's some issues I'm going through right now in my personal life or work life, actually, that are really painful. And
yeah.
So the body work has been one of those places that I've been doing a lot of yin yoga.
Yeah.
And they say the issues are in the tissues, right?
Well, that's a nice way to say it, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess what I want to know is just that there's an end to that, right? So these feelings keep coming up, and I'm wondering if, you know, after a while, that will be the end of it, and I will stop, you know, kind of suffering. But anyway, that's the one I'm going to be working on for sure, and I have started to do some Qigong as well. But the yoga, the yin yoga is where, you know, a lot of times you sit with the feelings in your fascia and in your muscles and in your hips especially, there's a lot of, you know, oh my gosh, the things that come up. And it's difficult, but, you know, I'm determined. And I have a strong meditation practice, so this is, you know, I think I tend to get a little blissed out in my meditation practice, and this is actually really addressing some real issues. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on all of that. And then the pausing one is great too, because I'm pretty busy. And I love the bliss of housework.
Yeah.
We call it domestic bliss in my family. And the other thing, one more thing I'll say is that you and I have in common is that we swim and do metta.
Yeah.
And I do swim and I do metta when I swim, and I love it. And I think of you all the time that probably Donald's doing this.
That's wonderful. Yeah, it's almost, I've been doing it for so long. If I went swimming and didn't do metta, it'd be utterly strange.
It's boring.
Yeah.
It's boring, right? A little boring. Swimming is great no matter what.
It would just feel weird. But, and I've told enough people about it. We have a group of people in different parts of the world doing swimming and metta.
Hey, this is one way to save the world, I think.
I think so. Yeah. Anyway, two thoughts on what you were sharing, which is really important, beautiful that you're doing these body practices. They sound very helpful. Well, two thoughts in response. One of them is, and this is more for other people, is that grounding in the body, particularly when there are difficult thoughts or emotions, is really, really helpful and even crucial, independent on whether it has anything to do with the subtle energy, right? That, being, let's say, with anger and feeling in the body can be tremendously helpful, you know, which in a way is repeating some of what you said about it being the issue in the tissues. I think that's independent about whether we're doing something that involves subtle energy. And then the other piece is you're asking, do the difficult emotions ever end, or the difficult thoughts? I don't think it's so much, actually, I'll say it this way. I don't think often we need multiple tools. And I don't think it's so accurate to think that, oh, if I do enough of the yin yoga or the qigong or whatever, I'll be filled with subtle energy and the issues will go away. I think we need really multiple tools, particularly for repetitive emotional patterns and, you know, repetitive thoughts, because a lot of those have to be addressed in other ways. And so I think it's a little more complementary that the body practices can be tremendously helpful, but they're not adequate for transforming all of our stuff. That's one way to say it, you know. And, you know, I explore a lot of this in the work on the judgmental mind, where we talk about getting back to limiting beliefs. But I like to complement that with body practices. Yeah. Still muted, sorry.
I was just saying that's very useful, and yeah, there's other avenues I'm taking as well, but it's a good reminder that not to lean on that entirely.
Yeah, or not to expect, oh, it should be working in this way, or I shouldn't be having those thoughts anymore.
Yeah.
It can be kind of have some openness and for that. Yeah.
Love it. Thank you.
Thanks so much as well. Yeah. Another person can share. Anyone want to share some of what you might have explored in the last week? Or, Barbara, did you raise your hand? Or is... There you go.
Okay. Well, when you talked about next steps last week, I wrote some things down. And some things I was successful at, some things I wasn't during the week. And one was I have a morning practice every day, was to add a night practice. I did it once and then completely forgot about it until I sat down today and looked at the piece of paper. Well, so that's still on the list.
Yeah.
And then I do have those, been working really hard on those stops or pauses during the day.
Yeah.
And I find that if I associate them with places, like I walked out my hallway and I remember that's where I have to stop.
Oh,
but
beautiful.
I only stop for like 2 seconds and I sort of, it almost feels like I'm bringing myself back inside myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I only do it for like 2 seconds, so I'm going to add, and you said 2 minutes, you know, to stay there.
Yeah, it kind of depends what's happening. If there's reactivity, you might want to be longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is just in general, just walking down this one hallway I have.
Yeah, well, just experiment,
And then there's a certain stoplight. When I drive, and it's the route I sort of have to go to get where I'm going most 90% of the time. So that's another place where I stop and try to bring myself, because I feel I'm just away thinking and planning and doing, and I'm really not inside of me. So these are great. And then I have one other place where I have a basement where my art studio, when every time I bounce down the stairs, I stop at the bottom and go into gratitude stop, that I'm able to still do it when many of my friends are having so much physical problems.
Yeah.
So I've been working really hard, but when you made a statement that you said something about fill your body with subtle body energy, and I don't understand what that is.
Well, what the subtle energy is of the body?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah, that of the 10, that's probably the most esoteric that I mentioned. And let me just, before I say a word about that, let me just thank you for bringing up the practice which you do of associating the pauses with particular places. I find that brilliant. Really, thank you. It's really it just came about from your daily explorations, but it really I can understand how that could really make a difference. You go to a particular place, or for some people it's a place. For me, it's like particular times. Times can do the same thing. Yeah.
I'm looking for more places, too. Yeah. I want to expand.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's really great. Yeah, the subtle energy, like I say, it's not, generally hasn't been part of the Western worldview. It's something which is very much part of the traditions which have developed with yoga, you know, the systems of the chakras. You find versions of it in the traditions coming out of India. The Tibetans have done a lot with it. It's there in Chinese tradition with acupuncture, you know, the meridians and so forth. And Chinese medicine works with a model like that. And I think I know less about this, but it's also found, I think, in many indigenous traditions, in shamanic traditions, there are versions of that. And so it's, again, I mentioned, it's been explored some starting around the 1970s or 80s by Western scientists, but it hasn't, it's still happening, but it hasn't gone too far. But it's something which also one can experience in, you know, one can experience it doing some forms of yoga, qigong, also when concentration in meditation gets quite deep, it opens up the subtle energy of the body, and it can feel like a tingling. You may have experienced it. It can feel like a tingling or some bliss in the body. I imagine you've experienced it, at least for short times, when the mind gets very quiet, there's a lot of concentration, there's a certain bliss that gets opened up in the body, you know, and this in the Buddha called this piti, you know, and it's one of the signs of deepening concentration. So that's another aspect of it. And, you know, so that's at least a start. But if doing a discipline like some forms of yoga or qigong, it would open up naturally. Or if you do a lot of concentration practice, it would also open up in different ways.
My concentration is to keep myself from flying away.
Otherwise I wouldn't worry about it because you have your other, you know, just focus on one or two. But if you're interested, you know, study qigong with someone. Tisha Bell, it'll tend to open up. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Donald.
Thanks, Barbara, for the. I love that connection with place. That's really that adds a lot for all of us. Great. So let's go to our closing, and we'll do this in two ways. One is to bring back in touch, if this worked for you, your one or two ways of deepening, your own learning edge for the next period of time. What's there for you if this resonated with you? Could be something that I didn't mention that's important for you as well. And more broadly, bring in your intention for the next week, the next 2 weeks. And then we'll close with the dedication of merit, as we typically do, remembering that we practice very much for ourselves. May the benefits of our time together, of our practice, be there for each of us. And may the benefits of our practice also be there for others, for people in our own lives, friends, family, people in our communities. And then beyond those circles, may the benefits of our morning, our afternoon for many, may the benefits of our time together be there for us, but also be there beyond our own circles, be there for all beings, knowing that we are part of all beings. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Carlita, for hosting, helping us with the list of 10. And again, I'll post that on Dharma Seeds if you want to download it. But people were able, I think, to download it just from the chat. So that's great. Yeah, thank you so much, Carlita. Yay, Carlita.
Thank you, Donald. Yeah. Thank you, Sandra.
Good to see you, Carlita. Yeah.
What a great
meeting.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Donald.
Thank you, Donald. Thank you, Carlita.
Until next time.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you, Carlita, and also Don. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, ditto.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Oh, Donald. Donald, I just want to, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
I just want to tell you one thing. I'm taking Vinny's A Year to Live this year. I'm taking that course he runs.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating.